And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Okay, everything we've been talking about for months is now in the can. Now we have to do the analysis, the postmortem. Let's start with Pennsylvania. What happened? And why do you think it happened?
Multiple reasons. What happened is that the top of the ticket, Josh Shapiro, had one of the weakest opponents in recent memory. Someone who wasn't just weak, but was dangerous. And Shapiro ran an excellent campaign. There were no errors, no goofs. It was a focused campaign. He'd been doing this for a long time, working towards this. The Democrats cleared the field in the primaries, so he didn't have to waste money there. And he might be the first Pennsylvania governor to get 3 million votes out of the state, out of the Commonwealth. It's he's within 2,000 votes of that, and they're still counting a few. He helped carry down ballot the fact that the Democrats, who at one point were down a few years ago 30 votes in the House of Representatives, the state house, they have actually won the House this time. They were down 23 votes this time, and they captured 12 seats, almost a 13th. So that occurred, and they had good candidates, and they had a good ground game. And then they had John Fetterman versus Mehmet Oz, and Fetterman ran a different kind of campaign where he went out into the hinterlands, the T of Pennsylvania, James Carville's, what he calls it, the Alabama part of Pennsylvania. And he was able to cut margins out in most of those counties. I think 56 counties he cut the margin, the Republican margin. So it was a combination of factors in Pennsylvania that contributed to what happened here.
Well, let me ask you this. Did Mastriano, the Republican candidate, was he really concerned with winning the governorship? Or was he really concerned with creating a statewide movement?
I think he wanted the governorship so that he could create his version, his dystopia, what we could call it, of what he believes into Pennsylvania. He had a movement. There's this religious nationalism, the Christian nationalism. But I think he miscalculated as to how big it was and how much, how popular it could be.
He just thought that this was a way to make it more popular for coming elections.
Well, you know, but he didn't reach out beyond his base. And he did very little advertising. And I thought he just, you know, he thought that God was going to anoint him governor.
But he really did think that. I think you're right. I don't think that's a joke. I think he really thought that. And I saw by some reporter who managed to get to his election night party, of course you couldn't get in unless they let you in, unless you were invited, but this guy got in. I think he was from the Inquirer, the Philadelphia Inquirer. And at midnight, Mastriani's wife, and he was way behind at that point, and she stood up and led the group in prayer to God, saying, "We're waiting for you to change the vote. We're not waiting passively. We're waiting expectantly."
Yeah.
They mean that. They believe that. So yeah. I mean, there's you know, that element of insanity. But,
you know, he got over 40% of the vote.
Well, that's the point. He got 2,200,000-some-odd votes.
He got a higher percentage than Rick Santorum did when he lost to Bob Casey that time. Casey won by 18%. Shapiro only won by 14 point something percent.
Well, that's kind of scary.
It is, but don't forget it. Well, and Santorum had the religious factor behind him as well, but not the crazy.
Santorum, I don't think, believes that the separation of church and state should be abolished. Mastriano ran on abolishing it.
Yeah. Santorum just wants the state to pay for religious thing.
Right.
The one thing that kind of surprised everybody was that Mastriano then conceded. You know, he wasn't waiting for any more miracles to happen. He read the vote totals, didn't claim any shenanigans or things like that. Now he's going back to the state Senate. We'll see what he does in the state Senate.
Well, if he doesn't do anything to whip up a statewide movement based on his 2,200,000 votes, then it seems to me that his campaign was just a joke, just a fantasy. But if he realizes and figures out some way to organize this base, he could cause real trouble. He could cause real fascist uprising in this state.
Well, that really, I think, depends on what the Republican Party does, how they revamp and reorganize after this defeat, whether they allow him and his kind, so to speak, to set the agenda.
Well, how could they stop him if he was determined to do it?
Well, that's a good question, and we'll see.
Well, that gets you to Trump. Look at Trump. Trump announced. I knew he would announce. He had to announce. Yeah. He couldn't not announce. So now he announced. So now there's a civil war that is open, not covert, but open nationally, right? But the civil war is uneven because he has the support of most of the rank and file, Trump, of most of the rank and file in the Republican Party. He has a more or less cohesive movement, the MAGA movement, and they use the Republican Party and they have the support of the Republican voters. Maybe 20-30% of the so-called Republican establishment opposes him, but a good part of it, two-thirds of it, doesn't support. They support him. So you got one-third, two-thirds, let's say. A lot of the form of money that he counted on is not going to be there, but he's got new sources of money.
Well, he's raised a lot of money.
He's sitting on $200 million, right?
He spent virtually no money to support Republican candidates.
Right.
And if you listen to Michael Cohen, one of the prime reasons that he's running is the grift. He keeps raking in the money.
Right.
So he's going to keep, and he'll be the big kahuna in that.
Now he's got a problem because he has a totally incompetent staff. If he had anybody who was competent in terms of organizing, they left him. Now I don't know if Kelly Conway is going to stick with him, and if she's capable of organizing, and I don't know what capability Steve Bannon really has to organize. He hasn't shown much except a big mouth. But aside from those, who's he got?
Yeah. Well, but Steve Bannon has done a couple of things. He's set out a vision to build from the bottom up.
That's right.
Remember, he's on the air every day with his podcast telling people, I want you, Mr. and Mrs. MAGA, to go out there and run for school board.
Right.
Run for town council.
Right.
Run for judges of elections. And
they do it.
They do it, and they've been winning.
And they've been winning. The Democrats don't respond. They don't put up either a programmatic opposition or an organizational opposition in most places.
Now, also, you have to understand that in some of these places, you know, it would be more or less futile for the Democrats. These are might be highly red places, but there are marginal places out there where they really should.
It's never futile. It's never futile. And then the school board election, you can make it not be partisan. you can say, well, look, we've got to study science. These kids aren't going to be able to get jobs. We've got to study history or whatever it is. I mean, what is the program of the Bannon people? You know, don't study history. Don't study geography. Don't study anything that you need to make a living or be an intellectual.
Where was it? Was it Florida or Virginia or Texas where they're cutting out Martin Luther King from the curriculum?
Virginia.
It was Virginia. You know, I want to know what they're going to do this coming January when there's Martin Luther King Day.
They're not going to celebrate.
You're going to have a holiday it's a federal holiday. It may not be a state holiday, it's a federal holiday.
So you won't, the post office will be closed. Okay.
So we're going to have a day celebrating a guy who you can't learn about.
Right. Exactly. Precisely. Who stood to redress a grievance that doesn't exist and didn't exist then.
That doesn't exist.
Which you can't learn about.
Right.
Well, but that's the way ignorance works.
Yeah, well, this is more than, this is enforced ignorance. This isn't just...
How about DeSantis in Florida, where he had the legislature pass a law that forbade college professors from discussing it in college classes?
And
a judge just this week said that was a law straight out of 1984.
Yeah. He's been losing those lawsuits down there, but they don't get the publicity.
That's right. They don't get the publicity, and nobody uses these legal defeats to organize to make sure that this, if they try to do it, at least it gets opposed from the get-go.
Yeah. The one guy that's out there doing the legal work is Mark Elias.
But he's really an elections guy. He's not a public. He's not a policy guy.
Right. Right. But he's been effective to the extent that he could be when the courts are stacked against him.
And that's very important because the government that we have coming in, you got a third of the judiciary are MAGA appointed judges.
Well, there was that incident this week where the Republicans filed a lawsuit specifically in a district where there's a Trump judge. Was it in Amarillo, Texas?
In Amarillo, Texas. They always file them in Texas. They got three judges that they always go to, and they always get the judge they want, and they always get the decision they want.
Now, this is the one about whether or not it's legal to have the birth control drug day after the morning after pill, something like that.
A is the morning after pill. Then there was another that stopped the Biden plan to cancel the student debt. That was canceled.
Right.
And the basis for canceling it is a completely made up Federalist Society doctrine of law that's maybe 6 months old, has a hoary tradition in American jurisprudence, that says that if regulation or a policy affects the economy, then it must be part of a law that Congress passed. It can't be a regulation or an executive action.
Everything affects the economy.
Which means that's the way you get rid of the regulatory agencies.
Right.
And Congress hasn't got the slightest ability structurally or in any way to do that kind of administrative work. And this is completely made up in the last 2 years.
Yeah. And now, of course, with the Republicans having the House, you'll never get anything passed that'll do anything.
Well, they don't want to pass anything. That's right.
No.
They don't want to pass anything. So, but even if they did pass it, now you got the third branch of the government saying, we're going to make sure that the legislature can't legislate because we're not going to allow these things to be constitutional, even though they are constitutional, or whether or not they're constitutional, they're necessary.
Yeah, I mean, they've got a triple layer on this thing.
Yeah. And so that calls for a very broad-based, intensive political mobilization, which so far isn't happening. And the election, you know, the Democrats managed to avoid the worst, but they certainly are a far cry from a national uprising. Like the Tea Party was a national uprising.
Yeah, I agree on that. They shouldn't be taking home laurels and sitting on them. No. They've got to capitalize on this as just the beginning of something that needs to be built on.
Right. That's right. Exactly right. Exactly right. But I don't see that I mean, I don't know about the Democratic Party organization in many places, certainly not outside of Pennsylvania. I don't know much. I know something about New York, but in Pennsylvania, I don't see that the Democratic Party organizationally has the ability to mount any kind of mass opposition. They don't nobody thinks that way.
Certainly not in Florida or Texas.
No, certainly not there. And in New York, where you could say the Democratic Party managed to give away the leadership of the House of Representatives, they lost four seats that they could have won in this previous election.
Yeah.
See, Democratic seats that flipped to the Republicans in the most Democratic state in the Union.
Yeah. Now, the only thing that's emerging from that for the benefit of New York State is the new Democratic leader, Hakeem Jeffries, is from there. And Chuck Schumer. So you have the two legislative leaders of the Democratic Party.
From Brooklyn.
From New York.
They're both from
Brooklyn. New York. But, you know, and that's one thing is that there is finally with the Democrats some youth or relative youth being taking place, a new generation. The House leadership, the one, two, and three jobs were all in their 80s.
Be careful. Don't get too close here now. Don't get too
close. Pelosi, Hoyer, and Clyburn. And the thing is that they were exceedingly effective. Nancy Pelosi was tremendously effective.
So if she's effective, what's the difference how old she is if she can continue to do the job?
Right. That's the thing. And that's going to be a question in 2024 when you have Joe Biden versus Donald Trump.
Well, more than Joe Biden versus Donald Trump, you got three Senate seats up for grabs that the Democrats have to control. One of them is really functionally a Republican, Joe Manchin, right?
His
seat is up. Whether he gets elected or he doesn't get elected, reactionary politics will stick in West Virginia. But now you got John Tester in Montana.
Right.
He usually wins his elections by 103 votes, you know.
Yeah.
Right. And the campaign is always about among Native American voters. American. That's the balance of power.
Yeah. I always call him the Big Galoot.
The Big Galoot. That's right.
You know, with the flat top hair and three fingers on his one hand.
Yeah. But the point is his victories are, you know, just bare by the skin of his teeth.
Well, in many ways, he's Fetterman like, you know, he's a guy who relates to the common person. He gets out there. You know, he's a farmer. He talks their language. He looks the part, you know, of one of their people. And we'll see. You know, every year is different, but it's going to be an uphill battle.
That's right. And the Democrats have to be ready now. Get ready now, not to cope with McCarthy in the House, but to cope with the Senate election in 2024.
Right.
I don't think they can do it if they're not active in every state behind a progressive program. Because why will people, you know, abandon the Republicans, abandon the MAGAites? Why will they turn out unless they see that the Democrats hold something in their program that's useful to them, that's beneficial to them? Not that Biden says, well, we passed it, it'll be effective in 2 years. Who cares about 2 years? I care about today. That's how elections are won and lost, today.
And, you know, the Republicans have handed them all these issues, the Social Security issue, the Medicare issue again.
That's right. Here is Scott openly saying, we're going to sunset Medicare, we're going to sunset Social Security. You should contribute to Scott.
Well, we ought to talk about that with the Republicans, with Mitch McConnell and Rick Scott down there going after each other. And Scott McConnell brushed aside his challenge. I think what was the vote? 37-10, something like that.
Scott got 10.
But that, you know,
10 is 10. Again, 10 is 10.
You know, again, they're playing the long game. It's 10 today. What will it be tomorrow? And McConnell isn't going to be around forever.
But that's the point. McConnell's not a spring chicken.
He's in his 80s, and he doesn't enjoy being in the minority.
No.
And, you know, he might be just sticking around right now for spite for what Trump has been doing. He doesn't like Trump. And we'll see in 2 years where the party is on that. But it is, it's enjoyable to watch them fight.
It's enjoyable to watch them fight, but this brings me back to something you said about the margins. You were talking about the victories in Pennsylvania. Fetterman narrowed the margins, and you know, the implication is that Democrats got more votes. I don't know about the rest of the state. I know about my county. In my county, there's no doubt that the Democrats lowered the margins. That is to say, the Democrats were the beneficiary of the margins being lowered, but they didn't lower the margin. They lost votes relative to the 2020 election. It's just that the Republicans lost more votes, so the margin naturally got narrower. But that's not a victory for the Democrats.
No, and the question is, you're not going to have a Fetterman on the ticket who's going to have that personal appeal.
Yeah.
And you're not going to necessarily have a Mastriano on the ticket that repels people.
Right. And the last time Trump ran for president in this county, the margin for the Republicans increased to 71%. That was their margin. Now, that's, you know, if he'll be on the ballot again, somebody will be on the ballot again. This business about looking at the margin, that's the wrong way to look at elections. You got to look at your support, not the margin. Naturally, there's always a margin, but what's the reason for the margin? Is it because people support you, or is it because they dumped you, but they dumped the other guys more?
Yeah, or the people sat it out.
Which amounts to the same thing.
Yeah.
So, taking comfort that the margin narrowed means nothing. What you need to do is look at the question, why did the margin narrow? What caused it? Is it because the progressive forces got more support, or because they lost less support than the other guys lost? In my county, it's because they lost less support than the other guys lost. And that is not a victory for progress.
No. No. You can't misread the tea leaves.
Yeah. But that's what the Democrats are doing. Yeah. If they're running around talking about the margin, without saying, you know, what's the cause of it, then they're deliberately...
Well, that's where you need your campaign experts to really see through that. And not,
but that's right. Not, but they're the ones doing it. That's the problem. They're the ones doing it. I think I mentioned to you that the New York Times did a study about how many counties increased their votes on the Democratic side or increased their votes on the Republican side. And they said that my county increased its votes on the Democratic side. So I looked up the numbers that the Times was using. And it turns out they made up the numbers. The numbers that they were basing this judgment on had nothing to do with the numbers that were actually issued by the elections office, which is actually the votes counted. So I don't know how many other counties they made that same mistake in, but it means that you can't judge the data industry. You can't count on the data industry.
Yes. Well, and the data industry's also had problems in polling, tremendous problems
exactly.
in polling.
Right.
And there's a shift there. And the question is, how can you try to get an accurate read? You know, you get into focus groups and things like that that may. I know there's one group that goes around. I can't remember exactly the name of the group that after an election, we'll spend the next 2 years focus grouping the people who flipped. In other words, the Obama voters who went for Trump, who went for Biden, and seeing what they're saying, and hear, you know, just to hear the words that they use, it's close to what Frank Luntz does.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to know how to read it correctly. But are they mouthing words that they hear from right wing media, or are they, or is there another message that seems to be breaking through? And, of course, they're all small samples. When you do a focus group, you're doing maybe 6 to at most 20 people at a time. But if you do enough of them, then you get a better idea of what could be happening. What could be happening?
When I was a kid living in New York City, during election times, the candidates, the local candidates, the congressmen, basically the congressman, before the election would say to his committee, here's where it's going to fall out. I'm going to get these many votes, and the other guy's going to get those many votes. And invariably, they were right to the point. They had it right. Because those campaigns were campaigns based on knocking on doors, being in the community, knowing the people.
Right.
And they were able to judge how many people would come out, and they had a way to pull them out. And they were able to judge how many votes they would get. And the ones who were good about it were able to, with polls closed at 9 o'clock, and by 5 after 9, they'd say, I'm going to win by 3 points. I'm going to win by 10 points, or whatever it was. And invariably, they were right. Well, there's no political party I know on a county level that's able to do that at this point.
Well, remember what happened a few years back when the heir apparent to Nancy Pelosi in New York State got swamped in his primary by AOC?
That's exactly right.
And he was the head of the...
He was the head of the Queen's Party.
He was the head of the party.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right.
We just had Sean Patrick Maloney.
The same thing. Well, he already... for him, it's even worse because he went and migrated himself into another another district. To do that, he had to kick out or convince the guy who was there to leave, which was a progressive Democrat. The guy
Montclair Jones.
He went down to run in a new district in Manhattan, in Staten Island and Brooklyn, and he lost. Yeah. And then Maloney lost in the district he migrated himself into. So not only did you lose a progressive Democrat, you lost two Democrats.
Yeah.
That's some leadership.
That's it. You know, I just want to touch on briefly, we talked about whether you have a good statistical sample. Something happened this week. Elizabeth Holmes got sentenced to 11 years in prison.
Right.
And she ran that con of that company, Theranos,
right,
which was based essentially on statistical sample. She says, I could take a couple of drops of blood and tell you all these things about these diseases. And it was a phony. It was a con job. But it goes to, you know, she got a lot of smart people suckered in. She had people.
But she was a jerk. She got Henry Kissinger suckered in. She got George Shultz. So she had two secretaries of state, one national security advisor, one labor secretary. She had the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. She had Jack Welch. She managed to lie to the people who run capitalism. They didn't. Right. You go to jail when you lie to people like that if you take their money.
Well, another guy's going to jail has a good chance of going to jail. That's Sam Bankman-Fried, who was running that FTX, the crypto currency
scam.
And you know, politically, he was behind George Soros, the largest single individual donor to the Democratic Party. But he, again, you know, a lot of smart people got suckered in. He had banks behind him. He had whatever. And it goes to, in some ways, regulation. But he was in Bahamas where he wasn't falling under the SEC.
Even if he wasn't in the Bahamas, the SEC doesn't regulate cryptocurrency.
Yeah. And that's,
and the banking commissions doesn't. They don't. It's completely unregulated.
Yeah. And we're seeing the consequences of when things are unregulated, people, you know, when the banks lose money, you think, well, it's the banks. But when a lot of individuals lose money on this, they're getting wiped out.
Well, that's just another example that if you leave capitalism to itself, people get ruined.
Sometimes they self-destruct, like what Elon Musk is doing at Twitter.
Yeah, well, he's doing to Twitter. Look at this. 75% of the workforce is gone. Right? He laid off half, and then the others quit.
He found out the authoritarian model doesn't necessarily work in every instance.
Well, we'll see what happens with him. There's more to analyze. It looks like Lisa Murkowski will be back in the Senate, though.
Yes. And we'll have to see about whether Herschel Walker and his discussion of vampires and werewolves will make it to the Senate.
Right. So we got something to talk about next week. See you next week.
See you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.